Everybody, welcome to a Wednesday edition Bulldog Hour and Sports Line time of year. The absolute title, Sports Line, the Bulldog Hour, is applicable because, of course, we are in the midst of the down period at Fresno State, but we're still going to talk Bulldog football today with our good friend Jackson Moore in just a couple of minutes, and we will also talk to another longtime friend in Bob Fraley as we have reached the North American Pole Vault Championships once again in Old Town Clovis. This has become one of the great events, and it's always terrific to talk to Bob. We usually talk week of this time, a week early, be July 19th, a week from Friday in Old Town, and we'll get to that around 2:30 today. Also want to mention up front that the 76ers Summer League team just wrapped up a disappointing game in Las Vegas against the Pistons, losing 96-81. The outcome is not the problem. The issue with Deshaun Taylor, played 13 minutes, did not have a good day, 0 for 2 from the field. Didn't get, obviously, a lot of opportunities. Missed his only three-point shot. Had a couple of rebounds, a couple of assists, one block, two turnovers, and his plus-minus was minus 4. So this is not a day that I'm sure Deshaun is very happy about, but he'll be heading to Australia after all of this, so he just wants to try to get his name out there, and then maybe things work out toward playoff time. But that's what happened in Vegas. They'll continue playing ball for the rest of the week. I'll talk to Daryl tomorrow about all the stuff going on NBA-wise, and there's a ton of things, particularly if you didn't hear about Kawhi Leonard's deal, which is essentially a two-year lock-in and then an option year, so not a lot different from what he could have gotten in Toronto. So both he and Paul George have an out built in after a couple of years. Now, I don't think it's going to be an issue, but it is a little bit extra leverage. And speaking of leverage, Adam Silver is not happy about the leverage that players have, which means the owners have been bending his ear. That, again, is a topic for tomorrow and also with Marcus on Friday. All right, guys. Chance to talk to the aforementioned king of the bark board, our good friend Jackson Moore, who has not only the bark board, he's got San Jose State's board, Hawaii's board, and, of course, University of Guam's board, where he does yeoman-like work. Jackson, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, Jackson. You are in the Buckeye State right now, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. I'm actually sitting right outside the Boston Arena, and I can see the horseshoe out in the distance. So, yeah, I'm right in the thick of it over here.
Well, if you bump into David Carr there, David did not have the greatest time there in 2000, but bounced back the next week and had an outstanding game at UCLA, a place where the Bulldogs have played very well. They should have won that one in 2000, and you were just at the Rose Bowl Stadium last year. Have to be careful about that. I'd love for it to be the Rose Bowl itself, the Rose Bowl Stadium where Fresno State won. And you and I are going to talk about 10 miles away from there, or thereabouts, actually more than that, for 10 miles campus-wise, more than that from Pasadena to downtown L.A., about Fresno State and UCLA or USC throughout the summer. But, Jackson, I want to get to a couple of issues here up front. First of all, I want to mention you have in the former Bulldog series nice piece on Aaron Mitchell, right, that just went up today. Is that right?
Yeah, and, you know, they've all been great that we've done so far, in my opinion. But Aaron Mitchell, very kind of talkative guy. He was really willing to talk about a lot of subjects and was very fair, I felt. He talked about the transition from DeRuiter to Tedford and didn't knock the former coaching staff in any way, but really went into detail about some of the things that weren't necessarily better in his mind, but were different, that worked a lot better for the players and just kind of clicked a lot, and told some humorous stories as well, and gave us about 25 minutes. So a really detailed kind of look behind the scenes of his time in Fresno State football during that transition.
Well, I hope people
and,
check it out.
Also, playing professional rugby over in San Diego, a pretty interesting career, what he's doing right now.
That's right. He's waiting for that professional rugby league to pop up and be a rival to the NFL, I believe. Although I think he could whip on the new XFL just between you and I. And I know it has more legs than that Association of American Football, whatever that thing was, that crashed and burned in midseason. Now, speaking of Jeff Tedford, all right, Here's the old Prince of Blends, and that would be you, because I'm glad you brought it up. Our good friend Dennis Dodd at CBS Sports, which is part of what Jackson does. Jackson makes mega bucks. He's got a deal like Woj has at ESPN, roughly the same, that the gig that Jackson has with CBS Sports. But Dennis Dodd, who we've had on the air many, many times in the past, was ranking coaches 1 to 5 or 0 to 5 in regard to being on the hot seat. 0 meaning untouchable. 1, you're in a great position. 2, you're okay for now, etc. All the way to 5 where you have the motorhome running and you're ready to go. Okay. Now, first of all, Jeff Tedford gets a very good 1. But he was referred to as Jeff Tenedford. I don't know if you've seen this yet, but there are extra characters in Jeff's name. Do you have any idea? I'm trying to figure out how this happened. Do you have any idea, Jackson, how Jeff has suddenly a longer last name? I'm just wondering.
Yeah, that must be a typo, because you can always, I mean, a lot of times you can say, oh, there they go, not counting Fresno State, not giving them credit or respect, but Jeff Tedford is well known from beyond his time with the Bulldogs.
Yeah, there's no reason for that. I guessed. I'd like to say spell check, but it's not one character that's off. They've got like 3 extra letters running around there. So anyway, I know you'll, as soon as we get off the air, you'll call CBS directly and tell them you need to correct that. All right, of more substance in that list, I wanted to get your view of this. They've got guys like Jay Norville or Calhoun at a 2, which means they're okay for now. They've got guys like Harsin, Tedford, Rolovich at a 1, which means they are fine. Rocky Long at a 2. Okay, so that's pretty much, Jackson, I think, how you view it, though. I would think Teddy would be a 0, one of the untouchables right now, but 1 is good enough. But I do want to ask you about the guys that didn't rank quite as well. Both Brennan at San Jose State and Sanchez at UNLV, 4 out of 5, okay, in the fail-safe system here, okay? So, nuclear disaster on its way. Are you pretty much in line that those two are in that much trouble at the moment?
Yeah, and they're kind of two different situations. You look at Sanchez at UNLV, and he's been, you know, very well-liked away from the field and the wins and losses. He's done a lot of good things there and got some momentum going for that program, but it feels like they kind of plateaued last year. Didn't quite take that step ahead they were looking for. I know when I was there for the Fresno State UNLV game, there was a lot of, hard feelings towards the program. There was just an overall atmosphere, whether it was media or fans, that there was just not a whole lot of happy feelings about what was going on. And those sentiments got amplified and echoed throughout the game as the Rebels got just demolished from the first quarter to the fourth. But you look at San Jose State, and that just hasn't even got off the ground. And Coach Brennan has a lot more years under contract. I believe he's only going into year 3 out of 5 that they started him out at. But, I mean, if they can't get more than 2 wins in a season going into year 3, you've got to, I think, abandon ship at some point. But they're still holding the sentiment that they're going to turn the corner there at San Jose State, and that year 3 will at least be something to move the program in the right direction.
Yeah, look, Jackson, you're right on all counts, and I know because you cover the program, all kidding aside here, for that board, you understand completely what's going on. And I've mentioned to you that had there not been that change in athletic directorship a few years ago, unexpectedly, in the university president and all that stuff, Pat Hill might very well be the coach of San Jose State, and I can guarantee you this, that San Jose State team would not look like it does right now if Pat Hill were the coach. And that probably is good news for Fresno State that Pat decided to stay here. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think the reason that it worked out the way it did is just because Brennan had San Jose State ties and Hill had Fresno State ties, of course. And it might have been more difficult to get the, you know, the surrounding community to buy into Hill, but you can see how it's worked out. You know Pat Hill in the past. What you can say what you want about some of the shortcomings during his long tenure at Fresno State, but he was obviously doing something right to have that long tenure. And one thing he really knew how to do was recruit, find players, get people to commit to the program, and that's all things we have not seen at San Jose State. They have not been quite as urgent with their recruiting and getting immediate pieces the way we've seen Jeff Tedford do it at Fresno State now. And, it's just been a whole lot of nothing so far, and we'll see if year 3 with 3 years of recruiting, if their own guys can kind of start to get things going this year, but I haven't seen it so far.
But tell you what, if Gene didn't leave, Pat might have gotten the money he needed for the assistance, and it could have been completely different. But it is what it is, and I know Pat's having a great time playing golf, living the good life, and also in the booth with Paul and, of course, Cam on the sidelines, and still great friend, and terrific that things are working out well all the way around for Pat and his kids and everybody around the Hill family. But this was a little bit of a disappointment at the time, I know, because there was a real chance to grab the San Jose State program by the nape of the neck and make it something. And, Jackson, you and I have talked about this enough. You see it all the time. I don't know how willing they're going to be to replace Brennan because they don't want to spend money there. They don't have the money to spend. They don't have the interest there. And one more time, are you still confident that San Jose State stays at this level of football, or do they have to consider dropping down or dropping the sport if it continues like this?
You know, for the foreseeable future, I see it still playing forward. As long as they're in the Mountain West, I think they'll continue D1 football. I don't see it changing, even though times are tough right now. They have a commitment to the program. Currently right now, they're taking out the seats. You know, they have the double-deck side of the stadium, and then on the opposite right. side, they are doing some big-time remodeling, trying to get that ready for the football season. So when the Bulldogs go down there in November, it should be a very different-looking venue on that side of the stadium. Actually, less seats, but they're going to put in a whole new football operations area, weight room, locker room, all that good stuff. So they are committing to the program. They got enough donors to get that off the ground. So I think the commitment is still there, but if something were to happen, conference realignment and all that, if anything happened where they weren't in a competitive conference like they are right now, it could make life pretty difficult. And we've already seen it with Idaho. They kind of got left out of right. the conference realignment, and now they're in FCS football. And New Mexico State's still hanging around, but it's a tough plan if you're not in a decent conference.
Well, and that's where BYU comes into play, should the Cougars at some point, as the deal with ESPN runs down, at some point, Jackson, the Cougars may reconsider, and if that's the case, I don't think you want to go to 13, right? You're going to thin the herd to put them in, correct?
Yeah, and it's a tough way to go about it, but you know, right now it's kind of set up the way it has, and we'll see if any major changes come in the coming years.
Yeah, I've had people say, well, here's the solution. You get San Jose State out of there, a little harsh. You move BYU to the Mountain, and you move Boise State into Fresno State's division, and then all the clamoring about playing every year is solved because the Broncos and the Bulldogs are in the same side of the bracket. I don't know if that's going to happen. We'll see. All right, the other thing I want to ask you about here, anything new in Jaden Casey land? Is it still same old as we wait to see for the dotted line here as we close in?
Yeah, I'm even kind of cruising around the other school sites and reporters that cover schools that Casey's been offered from, like Alabama. It seems a lot of those have kind of taken their attention off of him. It seems pretty clear that he's not changing schools to any of them. I'll be curious to see if UCLA or USC are in a position to go after him, but they both have quarterback commits, and I don't really see a school out there that's going to swing him at this point. He's really committed to Jeff Tedford, and as long as Coach Tedford's sticking around Fresno, then it sounds like Casey will be here.
Edwards, Cropper, Casey going to make for a pretty good Fresno State team in a couple of years. Not that they're not good right now, but are you looking at that a little bit in the future here?
Yeah, I think so, especially when you look at the recruiting rankings. Casey and Cropper are two guys that don't typically, the ones that Fresno State's able to get. And,
right.
They still have to come in and prove it and do it all on the field and all that. But the ceiling is much higher for those two than we've seen at Fresno State in a long time. And, you never know. You saw Devontae Adams come here with two stars, and he became one of the best receivers ever here at Fresno State onto the NFL. But the way it looks coming out of high school with the projections and everything, those two especially, Amore Edwards to a slightly lesser degree. And, these coaches have signed 12 receivers, I believe, already in 3 years, and most of those guys are underclassmen. And you're going to have to see the cream rise out of the crop there. There's going to be a few guys that make it as the key guys, and There are a lot of options to pick from right now, and interestingly, a lot of local options, which is really neat. I believe there's somewhere, and I know it's 5+. I don't know the number off the top of my head, and you've got Magdalena coming in next year. So a lot of really good options and a lot of local options. So that receivers unit is a really fun one, and especially when you know you have Jaden Casey coming in to throw to them, it's going to be pretty exciting. And if someone beats out Casey, then I think you're in a pretty good situation as well.
And this team figures to be good this year, waiting for all of that to happen. And Jackson, last couple of things. You and I will not visit next week because the Giants and their quest to win the World Series. Look out for this Giant team in the second half. It's just going to come out like gangbusters starting on Friday. They might actually reach 500. Probably not. Definitely not. But one can always pre- It's a long way between now and October, all right? Not meaning they're going to find a way to get up in the standings. It means we got to survive all the way to October, okay? But we won't visit next week because the Giants are in the slot. So I'll ask you a couple of things here quickly, and we'll pick it up in a couple of weeks. One, tickets went on sale for the Minnesota game. Are you a guy that really believes much of that attendance is going to be tied into the performance at the Coliseum? Are we going to see a great advance no matter what?
I think a lot of people will buy their tickets ahead of time. I don't think it'll sell out before the USC game by any means, but I think that you'll have a lot of people that buy their tickets, and maybe, you know, if they're in a position where it's flexible enough where they can decide if they want to go or not after the USC game, maybe you see some empty seats in that meeting. But, yeah, I think the ticket sales are going to go pretty well there. But it's going to be determining what happens in that USC game, who shows up game day for ticket sales and the week leading up to it. If the Bulldogs can beat the Trojans, I think it sells out. And Minnesota, while not the biggest name in college football, is still a big Power 5 school and one that hasn't come to Fresno State in a few years and usually does very well. You know, even if the team's not doing well, we've seen it in the past with Utah and Nebraska coming to town. Those were not competitive Bulldog teams, but those were very highly attended games. And regardless of the USC game, I think we'll have a good crowd for Minnesota. But if the Bulldogs can win, you know, get that momentum going in LA and on national TV, close to rankings and all that, I mean, it's going to be a big-time atmosphere for the Gophers.
Well, Bulldogs are about a 2-touchdown underdog in Trojan land. That about accurate in your opinion? Because, again, we're not talking about the reality on the field. We're talking about the public perception. Is that about what you expected?
Yeah, I thought it was maybe a little bit high. I was expecting probably about 10 or so. You're talking about big USC program at home opening weekend. You know, if they had played in a bowl game, which wouldn't be possible with the Trojans record, but I think right. The Bulldogs would have been favored at that time. But now you're talking about a lot of overturn and, you know, a lot of people that aren't looking as closely into the program as we do. I think Fresno State is pretty well stocked at most positions, and the only thing that makes me concerned about USC and Minnesota is the timing, because they're going to have to get all the loose ends and all the rust off and get everything to mesh together in week one and week two, and that can be challenging. Now, we saw in 2017 there wasn't a lot of pressure to go into Alabama or Washington to get those wins, and by the fourth game, the team was pretty much in sync from that point on. But there's a lot of new faces that are going to be in the lineup, and I think they have the talent to get it done for sure, but we'll see if it all lines up for the opening 2 weeks.
Well, you and I have a full summer to talk about it. We will certainly do that in the next couple of months, getting to the 31st here, as we have a little less than 2 months to talk about it. All right, Jackson, last two things for you. One, anything else new in recruiting land in any sport at the moment? I know we are not in the most forward-thinking time for everybody fan-wise, as far as the immediacy of what might happen. It's all projection because signing day's away off. But where are we at this point here as we head toward mid-July?
Yeah, football's a bit of a quiet time. There was a report, three-star cornerback, Cameron Forrest. He's got the Bulldogs in his top three, and that's about as breaking as it's gotten in football land. It's the dead period, and a lot of these guys aren't able to really check out any schools or have instant communication with the coaches. They're kind of waiting for the little spot they get in the end of July at the beginning of August where they can do a little bit of that and then wait for the season to take officials and check out games. And so it's a dead period for football right now. Basketball, Bulldogs, from my understanding, saw some reports while checking my phone the seven footer from San Joaquin Memorial, Alex Mea, committed to the Bulldogs. So that's an exciting get for the Dogs. A big seven footer to groom behind Juf, and you'll have 2 7 footers, assumingly, in the future, and a position that the Bulldogs were unable to recruit for some time, and now it seems like it's a position that is kind of disappearing from the game of basketball. The big true centers, but the Bulldogs will have at least one this upcoming year, and at least one going forward. We'll see what happens with Juf, but it'll be pretty exciting to see two of those guys developing, and it'll be very interesting to see how Coach Hudson adjusts his game plan, because we know he's going to adjust to the players that he has, and there was no guy like that on the Bulldogs roster last year. They had to play small ball and launch a bunch of threes.
Right.
So as exciting as that was, it may be a different look at the game plan for basketball going forward.
Well, Brook Lopez has shown us that the seven-footer can become a three-point shooter, so I'm sure that will be the evolution we'll see here. And in the last 30 seconds, Jackson, this Fair Pay to Play Act, which you and I will talk about. I want to get Jim Patterson on because Jim was the only legislator statewide who was there who went ahead and said, I'm going to pass on the vote. So he was a guy who let it go 9-0. It was voted by the State Assembly to move forward. Do you buy the NC2A, who has evidently going to have a report in October saying, don't approve this in August? Don't sign it, Newsom. It could cost California a chance to compete in championships. Is it, as Medina, the head of this committee, is saying, just bullying by the NC2A, or is it a legit statement in your opinion, Jackson? Because I know Jim Patterson is saying it's kind of a game of chicken right now. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I feel like it is a bit of a game of chicken right now, and I feel like something's going to have to give. I mean, it's an excellent talking point right now, and it'll be extremely interesting to see what happens if it all plays out, but I feel like something's going to have to give before this kind of reaches the boiling point. And it's interesting that the Cal States and the UCs, from my understanding, are opposing this, and there's certainly good reason for it, but it seems kind of hard that they're on one end and the legislators are on the other end of it. Just from the way that everything's set up, you think that they would kind of be in the same mindset. But obviously the NCAA is a strange organization when you look into how everything's set up and how a lot of people feel like the player should be paid and at least have the access to use their likeness. But this thing's got to be across the board. And obviously the NCAA can't have California schools getting all the players and reaping the benefits and then having an unfair playing field as well. I think something's going to have to give, and I don't think it's going to reach the finality there afterwards.
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of discussion this week. I'll talk to Daryl, talk to Marcus, and we'll continue all the way through whatever the decision is in mid-August about this to talk about it and then probably beyond. Jackson, appreciate it. Enjoy your time in Buckeye Land, and I will talk to you in a couple of weeks when we get the schedule back to normal. Take care, my friend.
You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, guys. Jackson Moore at BarkBoard.com. We'll take a break, come back with Bob Fraley, talk about the pole vault championships coming up a week from Friday in Old Town Clovis. Do that after this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. 2:32. Thanks again to Jackson for his time. ESPY's coming up tonight. We'll talk a lot of basketball tomorrow with Daryl. We'll get back into Emmert and the battle that the California legislature is going to have with the NC2A here coming up if they do go ahead and approve in August the ability for players to use their likeness. It doesn't mean players have to be paid, but it gives them the right to make the money. And the NC2A is saying, as you guys know, if this happens, California schools may not be allowed to participate in championship sports. We'll see if that's bullying, as Medina says, or whether it is a legitimate situation. Right now, I want to turn our attention to one of the great events. We promoted it every year. Time has flown by. It seems like just yesterday we were talking to the Doug Fraleys and the Dragilas about this kind of thing. We've always talked to Bob Fraley, who, along with Red Estes, was everything to track and field at Fresno State over these many years and still is a guy who is front and center. Old Town Clovis, a week from Friday, North American Pole Vault Championships. Normally we talk to Bob week of, but next week we have so many preemptions because the Giants baseball wanted to get to it today. So let's bring our great friend up. Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Working Bob, on this 25th year there in Clovis.
And that's what I was going to mention. We have been on air about this all 25, and I know when you and I talked about it when it first started, Bob, it was, in a lot of people's eyes, a very radical concept, but it quickly became the norm. And the thing that I take away is how many have tried to emulate this. It's got to be the greatest compliment to have people internationally saying this is a terrific way to present pole vaulting.
It is that you can't believe how many street vaults there are now across the country. And then more than that is the stuff that we did with the music and all of that. Now, like in Europe, all of the Grand Prix meets, this is the full track meets, you know, going from one city to the other. They all, music is very, very much a part of it. And they put the emphasis, look, athletes, try to develop the emotional connection with the fans that are there. Find a way to get them involved.
And you've seen, I know, Bob, so much in Old Town built around this event with vendors, other things. It's become almost a carnival-like atmosphere in that there's so much going on with pole vaulting being the focus, but so many families out there because there's something for everybody.
Yes, we make it a family event. You see what I mean? And we want to find a way to connect with everybody that's there.
You have teams from Reno and Clovis, Hanford, L.A., SoCal, Beach Cities, Phoenix, and Rising Stars. We've also seen local products. For instance, Liz Funk had a terrific year in high school again, and we've seen vaulters like that come through. The high songs, I mentioned Stacey Dragila coming here. Bob, as you close in on Olympic years, does the energy even raise a little bit more when we're a year away from the Olympics?
Well, we hope so. This year they have the World Championships.
Yep.
And the only thing is the week after, just within 5 days after the Clovis Street Vault this year, that they have the USA Championships.
Yeah.
Which has caused some conflicts this year. Do you see what I mean? Because the athletes has got to be headed to Des Moines, Iowa. And this year they're having the USA Championships late, a month later, because the athletes will be going to Japan for the World Championships.
Yeah, and everybody getting prepped for the Olympics.
Yes,
that can make
that's
it.
That's correct.
Bob, for people that haven't been to the event, again, it gets started at 4:45 on Friday the 19th, a week
That's
from
correct.
This Friday. And really, if you're out there, by the time nightfall hits, and, you know, when the weather is a little warm, it's great for the vaulters, but later in the evening it cools off anyway. But by the time this thing wraps up, the energy is just unbelievable. And I've talked to a lot of the vaulters who have said that it really raises their level, Bob. There's no way they can perform the way they do without the crowd lifting them, which, you
Absolutely.
Know, it's not always that way in a regular track and field event because there's so many other things going on. It's great for the vaulters to make it a singular focus, isn't it?
Yes, it is. That's why we decided to do it this way, to see, let people understand how exciting the event can be. You see what I mean?
Yep.
Way back about, let's see, I think it was about 5 years ago, we brought this young man in. We had a team from New Orleans coming, and we brought this little 12-year-old boy that came in, and we let him vault a little bit because his dad and mom and his grandfather came to support Team New Orleans. And so this young kid, Mondo Duplantis, set the world record for his age group there at Clovis. Little bitty kid, and now he's gone on to be the number one vaulter in the world, and he now, because his mother is from Sweden, he now competes for Sweden, although he was at LSU, but he's jumped 19.10 and a half. He jumped 19.10 and a half in high school last year. Just incredible. And
wow.
What's really funny is when I see him, he says, "Mr. Fraley, the best meet I ever went to was the meet in Clovis." And he's been all over the world competing.
Right. Well, that's outstanding. And as we've mentioned, Bob, in years gone by, the way this event sets up, there is a bowling tournament the night
before.
Yes,
we have at Valero there. Yes, we have We're at Bolero at 9 o'clock on Thursday night. That's correct.
And $15 per person? And that allows people to get involved. And then, again, on Friday, you have the event. You've got all the vendors out there. There's the barbecue and the awards dinner afterward at Doghouse Grill. And, Bob, I do have to ask you, when you started this, I don't know that you could have projected 25 years later, but was there any part of you? Was the game plan somewhere?
Well, our game plan was, 17 states had dropped the pole vault in high school, and there had been 18 athletes that had died from injuries in it. And so we had to have a strategy for success. So we went back and looked at everything as far as technique, training, safety, and all that. And then we went into it, and then we decided, hey, we're going to start presenting this to the people. And then the other thing is women's pole vault was just added just 2 years after we started it. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so in 1994, we went down to New Orleans and they're in the French Quarter, and we had all the media people and musicians and everybody come out and tell us, hey, this is what you have to do because people are going to be walking by. Find a way to get these people involved. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the other thing, and I mentioned this to you previously, Bob, the dedication the vaulters have, you know, your son Doug happened to live in the same complex, apartment complex, back in the 80s, my wife and I lived there as well. And I've told you before, Doug had to leave the poles out in the parking lot right there because there was nowhere else to put them. And I'd asked him one time about the travel, and he had said, you know what, it is a tough gig. It's not like a golfer even who can, you know, send his bags along. Those poles have to be taken care of, and it isn't a carry-on, is it? That's for sure.
No, it is not a carry-on. It's something that it takes a lot of time and effort.
What do you expect crowd-wise this year, Bob? Just curious, because we've seen it increase more and more. Any expectation at all about the numbers out there on the 19th?
You know, it really depends on the heat and stuff, but I think that according to what we're seeing right now, Fresno Clovis area is supposed to be 98 or 99 at 6 o'clock. So if it's down that low, then we can expect a good crowd. And it's a family event. And I have to say this. When we first started it years ago, I remember one young man came up, and, well, he came on to be a good vaulter. In fact, 2 years ago, he won the NC2A Division II Championships. And he said his parents and he was there to buy some fruit and vegetables, and then they walked down there and saw what was going on. And this kid, being a fourth grader or a fifth grader, watched it. And then after that, he decided, I'm going to be a pole vaulter. And he did. He went on, and now he went through college, NC2A champion in Division II, and he's now become a pilot.
Wow, that's something. Bob, last thing for you. Again, Friday the 19th. Normally we talk the week of. This is a week early because of the giant preemptions for us next week. So remind you, Friday the 19th. But I did want to ask you one final thing, the overall scope of track and field. I mentioned yourself and Red, really, from the time I was at Fresno State as a kid and then beyond, you guys were track and field. How heartened were you to see what happened in the state championships, to see local schools take on everybody and win? It's just got to be terrific to see.
That is absolutely tremendous. And this year in our Parade of Champions, we have invited Clovis North, and we've invited Buchanan, their girls' team, and Clovis North fourth team to be in our Parade of Champions. That is an enormous thing. Can you imagine two schools 4 miles apart winning the state championship in what is considered the most difficult state in the union to win? Do you see what I mean? And they won it. And now... You have Clovis Community College, which is located 60 feet across the street from Clovis North, and they're now adding track. And this is a huge thing for the San Joaquin Valley in the state of California.
Yeah, just outstanding. Bob, appreciate it as always. Have a great one with the presser on the 18th and all the stuff going on, bowling on the 18th and the event itself on the 19th. Bob, always great talking to you. In another 25 years, you and I will still be talking about this. How about that?
Hey, thanks a lot, okay?
All right, we'll see you, Bob. Take care. All right, our good friend Bob Fraley again, North American Pole Vault Championships, 25 years on the 19th, a week from Friday, Old Town Clovis. You can't miss it if you're in Old Town Clovis. 4:45 to 9:15, the bowling tournament at Bowlero will be the night before the 18th, $15 a person. Great time as well, and the barbecue will take place, the awards at Doghouse on the 19th at 10 o'clock when they wrap things up. They'll just head back up the way and put a wrap on what will be, I'm sure, another great event. It's just been terrific, and as I was mentioning to Bob, when we first started talking about this, the concept seemed to be so out of the box that you're saying, okay, let me get this straight. You're going to take a sport that normally has not been a singular event because pole vault always was part of the three-ring circus that was outdoor track and field or even indoor, and you always were fighting for attention because you'd have the long jump going on, you'll have, you know, running events, what have you, and we thought, okay, so you're going to try on city streets in downtown Clovis to put pole vault as the only event, and it's okay. And now you look up and you say, wow, what an unbelievable idea and what an amazing success, because it has that one aspect you have to have, which is the multiple appeal for diehards that love vaulting. It's all there for you, the proximity, the intimacy, to be that close, to be able to talk to the participants, etc. But also for those that want to bring their young kids around and go through the different vendors and the street fair offerings, that has evolved. And so it becomes a great opportunity for kind of that smorgasbord you want in regard to interest in other areas, and that's what has made the event so great. And then you have local teams. I mentioned Liz Funk having a great performance last year and then naturally a terrific spring as well. But you've got Clovis, Hanford, people there, also the teams coming from L.A., which they're terrific, and Phoenix and Reno. So it's just such a great event, and I hope people go out because it's a worthwhile cause. And Bob Fraley's a guy, like I said, with the Red Estes that really drove track and field forward at Fresno State. And Bob, after he retired, continued to work for nothing before he retired, doing what he loved so much. So I hope you're out there. All right, guys, last couple minutes to go. I wanted to address a couple of things email-wise. One, our good friend Dave, who had emailed in about last night's All-Star game. And, yeah, look, Dave, you're right on all accounts. I want to get this out of the way about the All-Star game because I've said this before. That was a good game last night, okay? It hasn't always been the case. Here's what I don't understand, though. You know, it was Tim Kirchen had made comment, and other people had talked about it in the know. It said, you know what we need? Our buddy Jeff Passan, of course, who wrote for the Bee and is now the primary guy. He is the Woj of baseball, if you will, Major League Baseball for ESPN. But Jeff Passan was saying the one thing he wanted to see is someone like Mike Trout playing all nine innings, because in the old days that kind of thing would happen. And that's probably not practical. I mean, for instance, you come off of this break, you know, tonight's the ESPYs and all that stuff, but tomorrow at least two Texas teams, by coincidence, the Rangers and the Astros, will play the singular national television game. Then everybody else gets started again on Friday. I don't know if you have anybody who's going to play all nine innings, but I'll tell you what you could do to make this better. You've already broken the normal rules of baseball in that if you get to a 10th inning, you're going to go to the international tiebreaker. So you're not playing traditional baseball rules anyhow. So what you really need to do, you need to have pre-substitution, kind of like softball has. One time you should be allowed to reinsert somebody in the lineup into the same position of the batting order they were in before. That way, if you play a Mike Trout for the first two or three innings of the game, then you take him out because you want to get other guys in. But the game is on the line late, and say he was hitting three and it comes around the bend to the eighth or ninth inning, you can reinsert him back in that position in the order, and that gives the fans a little bit of what they want out there. And I just think those kinds of tweaks would help. It was good to see a game like we saw last night. But every year, if you want to be a little more consistent, I think you need to bend the rules a little bit more toward the fans. What Dave brought up was the home run derby, and he was saying they need to cut down the hitting time. I would agree, Dave. By the time you get to the finals, everybody appears to be gassed, although it didn't show much in the way of home runs between Vlad Jr. and Alonso. Though, you know, the joke was, if you guys remember the home run derby at Miller Park, that Sammy Sosa was launching him off the back wall there. It was said that he was hitting a Titleist XL because that's how tightly wound the balls were. Now, according to Verlander, the entirety of the Major League Baseball season is being played this way, because if this continues this pace, they're going to break the all-time home run mark for a league by about 600 homers. I don't know during the year how bad it was in relation to the balls that were put out there for home run derby, but there's no doubt, and I don't care what Manfred says about the league not being aware of it, no doubt that those were juice baseballs we saw for home run derby. Whether they were the same as the major leaguers are seeing all year long, I don't know. But I would say, Dave, that anything in regard to trying to change the pairing head-to-head back to the best 4 of 8 would be more fair. And we've gone through it before simply because you are the victim of who you happen to be up against, and if you would have dominated the other two guys on the other side of the bracket, but because you happen to play against somebody when you're really not playing against anybody, because you don't compete head-to-head, you're just counting your total against that other individual, I would agree with you. It would be a lot better to go back to what we did before, which just go ahead and take the top four, then the top two, let everybody hit. Don't put them in the seeded brackets because you're too much at the mercy of the guy you happen to be matched up against. The other thing I wanted to get to is our buddy Gino in Visalia. And Gino, the minute that the NBA said they were going to go to the challenge for the coaches, I knew I was going to hear from you again. I'm going to talk to Daryl about this at length tomorrow. I get it, Gino. I understand you feel as though we have turned everything into machinery instead of human element. And I do think this is fraught with danger in many respects. But you also got to remember, even though it was a regular season game, when James Harden hit that three against the Warriors, it seems like forever ago, but that amazing three that won the game for the Rockets early in the year, as it turned out, it didn't make any difference in the overall scheme of things because in the playoffs the Warriors beat them. But if you recall, you had Kevin Durant clearly out of bounds. I mean, so far out of bounds, it was ridiculous. I think you have to get something in play to give a coach a chance to point out to officials that miss something like that, that they need to go back and take a look at it. The only problem you're going to have, other than the time this takes, is going to be that fundamental issue of you still can't request a call on a non-call. That can't happen. So all you can do is ask for something that's already been adjudicated on the court to be reviewed. You can't say, hey, my guy was fouled and you didn't call it. So that's not going to solve that issue. But I think, even though I do understand your feeling that we have dehumanized this game in so many ways and we're going to delay it even further, and I know you mentioned in the email to me that you think maybe they're going to insert ads, actually sponsored ads. And you know what? That's the height of cynicism, you know, but you may be right. I do think something has to be done to give coaches a chance. I think, however, they need to limit it a little bit more. I think the challenge needs to take place only in the last 2 minutes. That's my feeling about it. All right, we'll take a break, wrap it up. We'll get to all of that with Daryl tomorrow and Marcus and also CG on Friday. Take a break, wrap it up on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.